Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. My guest today is Dr. Nicholas Dodman. Dr. Dodman, in 1981, immigrated to the United States, where he became a faculty member of Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine. Shortly after his arrival, he became interested in behavioral pharmacology and the field of animal behavior. After spending several years in this area of research, he founded the Animal Behavior Clinic, one of the first of its kind at Tufts University in 1986. Currently, he's co-authored and edited his latest book. It's called The Good Old Dog. Dr. Dodman is a world-renowned animal behaviorist and the best-selling author of other books like The Dog Who Loved Too Much, The Cat Who Cried for Help, and my personal favorite, The Well-Adjusted Dog. He has appeared on Oprah, The Today Show, Good Morning America, 2020, and CNN, among many other TV and radio programs. Our discussion will center around our senior dogs today and how we can keep them healthy and happy. But before we talk to Dr. Dodman today, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338. Or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338, or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Dr. Dodman. Thank you so much for joining us in the doghouse again.
Good morning, Rini.
How are you doing? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And congratulations on your new book. I really liked it. I read a lot of it, and it's got some really valuable information in it. Good Old Dog it seems to have been written by everybody at Tufts University. Is that correct? In the behavior department, or is this was a joint effort?
Well, it's more than just behavior. It's actually everything you would need to know about good old dogs, and we have about 7, I believe it is, board-certified experts in different disciplines, you know, ranging from critical care to orthopedics, nutrition, and a board-certified nutritionist, mm-hmm. Cardiologist, internal medicine specialist, dental expert, board-certified veterinary dentist. Myself with a chapter on canine Alzheimer's, and so anybody, what we did was we planned the book to cover everything that possibly could go wrong with an older dog, or right or wrong, decisions that need to be made and so on, mm-hmm. planned the chapters, and then we just went fishing inside the school for somebody who was board certified in that area who was prepared to share their information.
That's great. What a very, very good joint effort. My first question is, I've always asked myself this, at what age should we consider our dogs to be senior citizens?
Well, officially, you know, if you like definitions, it's when 75% of your anticipated lifespan is complete, and that's for people and for dogs. So, you know, if a dog supposedly, depending on his breed and his size, you could estimate he typically would live to be about 16, then he would be entering his senior years as he passed through the age of 12. But it does depend on the age of the dog. And also these definitions about when you cross this threshold, they are somewhat arbitrary. And there's an old proverb, I think Chinese or something, that says, old age does not announce itself.
Yeah.
So you slide sort of hopefully gracefully through into that last quarter of your anticipated lifespan,
mm-hmm.
And you may or may not be noticing little glitches and bumps of reentry or exit at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when I read your book, I also noticed that you kind of base old age or senior time on the dog's weight. So does that mean that people should pay closer attention to their dog's diet and weight as they get older?
Well, actually, it's hopefully the dog is the ideal body weight, and that's a whole nother story. But supposing you have, let's say a boxer, and you know from reading the AKC's Complete Dog Book or other authorities that the ideal weight of this particular sex of that dog is 60 pounds. And yours is 80 pounds, you need to work to get it back to a more normal diet, a more normal weight. And we have a chart in there to help people, because it's not all just about numbers in books. It's also how the dog looks and how he carries the weight. So there's a chart that was designed by Natalie Purina that shows you, and it's reprinted with permission in the book, how to assess whether your dog is its fighting weight.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then there's another chart in there that, assuming your dog is at a reasonable weight, somewhere within sort of certain ranges. If you look up, his weight, you can see how long that dog typically would live, because it does tend to be weight, but it's not weight because the dog's overweight necessarily. That is a factor. But if a dog, say, Jack Russell Terrier or Parsons Russell Terrier is, in a way, sort of 15 pounds,
mm-hmm.
you can look up weight 15 pounds, and then go across and see what is the equivalent in terms of human years. And for these very small dogs, the factor tends to be something around 6. So if you had that little Jack Russell who's 10 years old, he might be equivalent to 60 in human years.
I see.
But then if you take a giant breed or a large breed, like a Bernese Mountain Dog, who weighs 110, you can go down the chart and you can look at 110-pound dog, and your finger goes across, and a 10-year-old at that might be equivalent to 80, so the factor is 8 in that case.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just ballparking it, but the chart covers all weights of dogs, but clearly a dog who's a Jack Russell who weighs like 10 or 15 pounds, 15 to 20 pounds maybe, that dog is never going to weigh 80 pounds. He's never going to weigh as much as a shepherd. He's always within the confines, but it's true that within those confines, if he's at the upper end of the weight scale,
yes,
he's going to have issues that are probably going to shorten his life further.
Is that right? Okay. Well, I guess it's like for humans also, isn't that correct?
It's true. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's been known since the turn of last century that, despite all of the nuances of diet and nutrition and whatever, that the single most important factor governing the lifespan of all animals, ranging from a mouse to a person and with a dog somewhere in the middle, is basically the amount you eat, the number of calories that cross your throat. So if you have a, calorie-rich diet, lots of, carbos and whatever, lots of fats, and you end up overweight, that surely will, scientifically is shown to will shorten your life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're lean and trim, you'll live longer. And think about it in terms of humans. You don't very often see an obese 90-year-old. And in dogs, you don't very often see a really overweight 17-year-old dog.
That's correct.
They've all gone earlier.
That's a good point. I know a lot of people, when they think their dogs have reached senior status, will put them on a senior diet. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts actually are determined by our nutritionist, so I tend to take my lead from her, and she was, her name's Dr. Lisa Freeman, and she's what you call a triple jumbo. That means she has 3 degrees from Tufts.
Oh, my goodness.
A master's degree, because Tufts, the jumbo, is our insignia, our emblem.
Mm-hmm.
She has got a master's degree, a doctor of veterinary medicine degree, a PhD degree, all from Tufts. And in addition, she's a board-certified nutritionist. She's dedicated her life to studying nutrition in dogs. So when I have a question, should I do this or should I do that, I always turn to Lisa. Lisa was interviewed for this chapter, and the wisdom contained therein is hers. And what she says, which I firmly believe, because I believe experts, not just the man or the woman in the street, she says that the word senior on a dog food actually means very little at all. It means whatever the manufacturer wants it to mean. And she says that some of them have fewer calories, some of them have more calories, some have lower protein, some have higher protein of different types. Some of them have additives in there that are supposed to are possibly helpful to older dogs, but nobody really knows. It's not really shown. So sometimes just switching the diet to a, quote, senior food, or for the mature dog or some such, just because it's just really a marketing strategy for people. They say, oh, but then the owner goes to the store and sees the senior food and says, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be a good dog owner and feed my dog the senior food, because he's now a senior. According to good old dog book, he's, you know, now past the age of 10, which is sort of getting to the senior years for him. And in doing so, you suddenly find that your dog starts to lose weight, because you were feeding him a cup and a half a day, and it turns out that you continue to feed him a cup and a half a day of food that's got 100 calories per cup less.
Yeah.
You think he's ill.
Right.
You bring him to the vet and say, my dog's losing weight, I think he's ill. And they say, no, it's because you switched him to a senior diet.
Oh, my.
Or the reverse can happen. He can put on weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you think he's got a, you know, some problem. He's suddenly started to put on weight. You have to cut back. Why am I fighting this? Has he got a thyroid issue? Nope. It's because you arbitrarily switched to a senior so-called diet. The only guidelines that are out there are for puppy food and adult dog food. Those guidelines are, you know, in sort of stone, carved in stone, and put out by the FDA, Center for Veterinary Medicine. And they tell you what you need to have in a puppy food for growth, and they tell you what you need to have in adult dog food. There are no such guidelines for a senior dog, so it's a crapshoot, and pet food companies capitalize on it to produce their own. And I'm sure they mean well. You know, I'm sure they mean to do find a good food. But they're all different, and who's to know which is the right one for a particular dog? So I guess the bottom line of this long story is, don't arbitrarily switch your dog to a senior dog food. Rather, consult with your vet about your dog's needs, and if you don't need to switch it, leave him on the food that he normally eats.
Very good. Very good at information. So, as far as the older dogs are concerned, are they more prone to dental disease, and what type of complications could that lead to?
Well, it used to be, you know, I'm old enough to remember the days where dental care of dogs meant doing nothing, and of course, as they get older, they have had accumulations of plaque and tartar on their teeth, which set up inflammation of the gums, so-called periodontitis, periodontal disease, and then you get pus pockets and teeth get loosened and so on, and eventually the owner notices, because the teeth either look bad or the dog's breath smells terrible, and he's now 9 or 10 years old, and you take him to the vet and he said, I'll need to do dental work. They put him under anesthesia and pull out half his teeth and put him on antibiotics and say he should be better now. That was in the bad old days, 40 years ago, probably sometime in the 70s, I would guess, I think 70s, 75 or so. Veterinary dentistry became a specialty and was championed by various groups who supported that specialty. And it became, you know, people studied it and got lessons from human dentists. And what we know is that dogs' teeth need to be looked after on a regular basis, and for dogs who are trained to accept having their teeth brushed, the dentist who's in this, Dr. Jane Jew, we call her JJ, she says the dog, if you can, either with a little corrugated finger stall or a special finger stall or a little toothbrush, you should brush your dog's teeth on a daily basis with some special dog toothpaste that's sort of maybe beefy flavored, not peppermint or something, and you keep away this plaque that is accumulation of bugs and germs and cellular debris that leads to the inflammation that can actually poison the whole body. You know, the mouth is the entrance to the entire body, so keeping your teeth in good shape is actually one of the cardinal things for good health going down the road. But if you can't, because your dog might nip you or you don't know how to do it and whatever, and he wasn't trained and you adopted him, he's very sensitive around his mouth, the least you can do is have regular dental prophylaxis treatments. So we just call them dental prophies. Mm-hmm. The same as most people get, that every 6 months or a year, your dog goes in and has a sedative or even an anesthetic, and say once a year an anesthetic, has those pearly whites completely polished up, mm-hmm. any glitches attended to. So what's happening nowadays is at 10 years old, because of this wonderful preventive treatment, dogs who have been subjected to it end up at 10 years old with a perfect set of pearly whites, and they're in great health because the owners have paid attention to that subject. So I just told you what was the past and what is the present. But of course, you know, people who haven't paid attention in the past will end up with a dog with bad teeth, tartar, smelly breath, infections, pus in the mouth, teeth falling out or needing to be pulled out, and those bacteria in the dirty mouth shower around the bloodstream to cause heart problems, kidney problems, and even, you know, brain problems.
What happens to the older dog? Isn't the older dog at risk if they do have to anesthetize them?
Not really. I mean, I used to be, I am, a board-certified veterinary anesthesiologist as well as behaviorist, and I used to say, and I still hold to it today, that there really is, and especially if you know what you're doing, which is always helpful with anesthesia, no risk of anesthesia of the older dog, and that's another one of these myths. Actually, the state of anesthesia, in my view, is safer than the state of being awake and breathing room air. You have a tube down your throat to protect your airway. You are breathing oxygen-fortified or oxygenated air. It's not really air, it's breathing oxygen during anesthesia, which is, you know, wonderful. That keeps you going. And cardiovascular support in the way of drips and whatever, listening, monitoring hearts. I mean, it's basically what would happen to you if you were hit by a car, God forbid, put into an ambulance. They would do, you know, put in an airway, look after your breathing, pay attention to your circulation, mm-hmm. so-called ABC of resuscitation. This is maximum support. It's safer than sitting around breathing room air. So there's no reason to doubt it, but some people make mistakes. So a lot of older dogs might be sort of tippling along with borderline renal disease, kidney disease, and the unknowledgeable vet will say, please withhold water from your dog for 12 hours before anesthesia. And what that does is a dog who's got kidney disease needs water because he needs extra water to get rid of his byproducts because his kidneys are not working so efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically a death sentence. That you'll precipitate what's called a uremic crisis. And so maybe the anesthetic goes swimmingly, but when the dog wakes up, he doesn't really wake up properly and he dies. And so the vet says to the owner, well, he was too old for anesthesia. And then the myth starts.
Oh, my.
What it is naughty vet, because you only need to withhold water for 2 hours. You should supply fluids during anesthesia in the way of a drip and use an anesthetic that wakes the dog up quickly so that he can resume drinking. So that's just one aspect of it. Plus, you know, vets need to know, just like with older people, that you need a lower amount of all the drugs. You don't need to use the same doses. If you use a dose that's good for a 2-year-old on a 12-year-old, it's like using a sledgehammer when you should be using a little tack hammer.
Oh, my God, that could be catastrophic. I mean, why wouldn't a vet know to ask whether, I mean, if the vet has been working with a dog for a long time, wouldn't you figure that they would know if the dog had renal problems or kidney problems and not to withhold water? Or?
Well, a lot of vets would do these days because another thing, like after the dental wave came along, there was a big interest in anesthesiology. I mean, there wasn't a specialty of anesthesiology in the United States until about 1973, and it was being taught in all of the schools by about 1980. So graduates for the last 20 years will have had an anesthesiology course with a board-certified, hopefully, anesthesiology instructor, and they should know these things because in the course you would have anesthesia for the patient who has pre-existing diseases. But if you were graduated before that, which is probably half of the vets in practice, you maybe didn't get that level of sophistication in terms of your anesthesia teaching. They just said, you know, anesthesia is you give barbiturates, put a tube down the throat, and turn the dial. When it was given probably by a surgeon would give that lecture. So there's different levels of knowledge out there, and it's improving all the time because now vets are required to do continuing education. They aren't forced to go and listen to different disciplines, so some of them may not choose to go and hear the latest things about anesthesia. But what I'm saying is there is some ignorance out there. We're in the aftermath of, you know, what was the Dark Ages when I graduated 40 years ago, let's say, was when the Dark Ages were still in effect. And throughout my 40-year veterinary career, I've seen things change for the better, including anesthesiology, but the myths remain.
Wow, that's fascinating. I would have lots of questions about vets, but unfortunately we're not going to have enough time. If people are starting to see changes in their dogs as they get older, what sort of changes might raise a red flag to you as the veterinarian if the owner's reported some changes to you?
Well, first of all, you should preface this by saying that the owner is part of the dog's healthcare team, because they're the person who lives with the dog. They're the people in a family as the group who knows best about the dog's behavior. They know that he always does this, and he's playful to this level, and he likes to chase a ball, and he does this and does that. If you notice things are changing, that's really a problem, because oftentimes in old age, you know, whatever changes, you know, activity level, sleep disturbances, not wanting to go for a walk, getting out of breath easily, you know, bumping into things, getting stuck behind furniture. I mean, something changes. You go along because the normal aging process is so gradual, like I said, old age doesn't announce itself, that people hardly notice. I mean, they might say, you know, they've got a 14-year-old dog, and they say, he used to run around a lot, but I guess, you know, I remember him when he was a puppy, he was very active, and he's less active now. Mm-hmm. And they say this is just normal aging, and they may be right.
Mm-hmm.
But if they notice a sudden change in anything in an older dog, that's not just normal aging. So, you know, and even the normal aging, supposing it's like a common condition would be arthritis. And so supposing the dog gets crankier and crankier with his joints until finally he crosses a threshold and he can no longer go up or downstairs or jump into the car. I mean, that would be something that I think would warrant attention, because as we say in the book, there are certain things you can do, from you know, having a certain amount of gentle exercise to keep muscles built up around joints, losing weight to put less strain on joints, using various supplements or aspirin-like drugs, and even a diet food put out by Hills called Hills JD. So there's lots of things you can do for a dog with arthritis. So when you see something happen, and when they cross some sort of threshold, it's definitely time to ask the question. And bottom line is, when in doubt, bring your dog to the vet and ask, tell him what's going on and ask the question and find out, is he just suffering from some normal aging change that where you really can't reverse the clock of time, or is there something that can be done? And I got to say that in most cases, something can be done.
Good. All right. Great. One final question. We're starting to get a little bit close to time here. In the elderly dog, in any dog actually, if the dog develops cancer, what is your opinion about putting a dog on chemotherapy? Do you feel that there is enough good stuff about doing that the dog could go through that treatment humanely, or are we actually putting our dogs in a situation that would just really be very painful and very negative?
Well, first of all, a lot of cancers are benign and operable, so, you know, they don't really need chemo or radiation, but there are some that, you know, following what they call debulking, which is sort of removing the mass of the tumor, or even not even doing that, somewhere chemotherapy, radiation therapy is indicated. And the veterinary oncologists, you know, relatively new specialists, the cancer experts, also board certified,
mm-hmm.
they will suggest to people that the dog's lifespan can be increased by kind of cooling the jets on, say, a malignant tumor, one that's eventually going to kill the dog. But what we do in veterinary medicine is different from what's done in human medicine. In a human, they could have another 20 or 30 or 40 years to live. So it's very aggressive treatment. They also understand that the treatment will make them very ill, but that they might come out at the end of the tunnel with the tumor completely blown away, you know, blitzed away and out of business. But in veterinary medicine, by the time an older dog develops cancer, and 50% of dogs over 10 do, then, you know, it's not fair, we feel, and the veterinary oncologists feel, to really blitz them and make them totally sick for a year when they don't understand what's going on. So we use very mild forms, sort of underdoses of these things, so that the dog doesn't get sick, but the tumor is held in abeyance. And this is the difference between veterinary cancer treatment and human cancer treatment. It's, you know, benign, soft chew, shuffle kind of thing, buying the dog some extra time. And used in that way, I think it's worthwhile, if you can afford it.
Okay. All right. That answers my personal question, too, because I've always said, you know, I thought it was horrible that we should expose our dogs to that sort of treatment. But if you're telling me that, you know, things can be done well, then I would consider it at least. But I would go to a board-certified oncologist, too. What about urinary incontinence? Do you see that a lot in the senior dog? And can that get the dog into trouble behaviorally?
Well, there's lots of reasons for incontinence in an older dog, and they can get, you know, medical conditions like, you know, diabetes and kidney disease and so on, which mean that they drink more and therefore urinate more and get caught short more often and end up having accidents in the house. But if you rule all those things out, plus you rule out the sort of dribbling incontinence that occurs in females which have been spayed, and they lose tone in their muscles, so when they're sleeping, they wake up and leave a puddle on the blanket. Mm-hmm. Rule out all of those things, which can all be treated. There is a sinister one, which is my chapter, which is about canine Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, they start to lose the place. They become somewhat disoriented. Their interactions with people are different. Mm-hmm. They suffer sleep disturbances, sleeping more in a 24-hour cycle and less at night, mm-hmm. and house soiling, having accidents in the house, for no known, you know, doing tests, there's no reason. It's just a dog who's formerly house-trained, starts to have an accident, no medical explanation, is one of the cardinal signs. And fortunately now there are treatments for that. I mean, several of them, which we mentioned in the book, ranging from the drug treatment Anapril, a newish drug from Pfizer that reverses the signs in a good percentage of dogs, right the way through changes in diets, like Hill's brain diet, or they call it Hill's B/D, to the addition of certain antioxidants and other substances that we list in the book, and even some human treatments that can be applied by brave vets who are using drugs perhaps for the first time for these for this effect. So, yeah, I mean, it's an issue, and you know, just like with people, there are some dogs who, you know, become incontinent, and you know that if you go to an old age, you know, nursing home, everyone's wearing Depends, and there's always a faint smell of urine in the air, and you've got to catch them, and they've got to clean them. They lose the place. They can't take care of business, and that happens to the dogs, too.
Wow. Dr. Dodman, you're marvelous, and every time you come here, I always learn so much. Can you please tell people where they can get your book, this book, this joint effort that you all made with Good Old Dog and the other books that you've authored? Where can they get them?
Well, let me tell you this. This book has been such an outrageous success. I mean, we've done other books like Puppy's First Steps, and, you know, they sold, you know, a decent number, but this book is flying off the shelves. 27,500 hard copies are out there of Good Old Dog, and it's such a success that the marketing campaign is going to be continued through March, because with publication books, success breeds success because they want to market more. So we're going to be out there in high profile in bookstores everywhere, like Borders and Barnes & Noble, also available on the web, Amazon.com.
All right.
And also you can actually access it on Amazon through my website, which is thepetdocs.com.
I got to go. Sorry, Dr. Dodman, I got to cut you off. You were wonderful. Please promise me you'll come back again soon.
You got it.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed our show. We'll talk to you again next week when we'll be talking about French Bulldogs. Have a great day.